Well, front surface reflections are a problem with them, but I have a North American calculator up here that's marketed under the Lloyd's name, in which I have a reflecting display. And if I pull the lamp on that, I think you'd agree that it's a remarkably good-looking device. The North American apparently had reflective mode in mind when they designed this device. You could hardly find any angle at which that calculator picks up an unwanted reflection. It's very readable. Take it outdoors, and it's brilliant, really. And I have, with all fairness to these other people, I have yet to see an LED calculator that can be read outdoors.
Would the gentleman from North American care to make a comment?
Yes. You can hardly hold him back.
Well, I had a couple of comments I'd like to make. One is that our name... that came from the North American Aviation part of the company has to change to Rockwell, so I mentioned that for those who had noticed. A couple of things.
The memory lasts for a long time.
In the electronic research division of Electronics Group in Anaheim, California, we made the first liquid crystal display for our own company, my group, and since they've been passed on to our microelectronics division, which is manufacturing department. There are a couple of comments made, and I don't want to dominate too much of the time. I might express some of the experiences we've had. One of the reflective mode, we first started using the reflective mode and found for the same things that Dr. Beckers was saying, that the reflections from the ambient light and the images that you get, if you have a reflector, it must be a spectrum reflector, cannot be a diffusive reflector. The images that you get, the confusion of the person's tie or their reviewing display, the type of lighting in the room, whether it's specular lighting or diffuse lighting, all of these things led to various anomalies in the display. So we completely abandoned the reflective mode. Reflective mode has absolutely no advantage as far as we can see at this time. In the transmissive mode, and perhaps some of you would like to see afterwards, we can show you a transmissive display. It's entirely transmissive, but at the same time, it's completely unaffected by ambient light. Immune to ambient light. That's very important at that point. The other thing the gentleman asked about cost, I guess buyers get very particular. Maybe the engineers don't understand what our marketing people do. I think they're trying not to sell things. But it turns out that the production capabilities are oversold already, so they can be picky. And finally, they come out with a price that they say, well, you can take it or leave it. But it's less than 50 cents a character. It's the price of the glass package when the display would be available. So one gentleman asked about power. Here, if you're going to put a light behind the display, the light is not necessary. It is not necessary to have a light behind the display. But if you want it to be brighter, under some situations, you would add light behind the display. That does consume power. But it's really not important because power is cheap. Switching the power is expensive. And so the electronics to switch the power costs more than the display. And the real advantage of liquid crystals, from an economic standpoint, is that they are directly coupled to a MOS LSI chip. There are no transistors, nothing but a wire in between. And some other things fall out, and I'd already mentioned that there's a really new technology here that we're looking at, and we have to look at it carefully. Because you can't compare one for one in many ways. First of all, obviously, the crystals don't emit light. The second is this power thing. You have the connector problems. Everybody's worried about connectors, and there's a 1 to 2 cent per connector point becomes important. You have connector resistance and connector contaminants and things like that. It turns out the connector costs more than the transistor plates. Well, because liquid crystals use microwatts of power, you can have a connector resistance of several hundred ohms. That's no consideration to you. So you can use things like very soft contacts, like conductive elastic rubbers. You can glue the darn things down. You can make your connector or connection electrically just simply with conductive epoxies. You can literally hold the display in your finger and conduct enough power through your body to turn the display on. So, the power, the switching of power, is more important than the cost of the display. display for the display itself. And as you had mentioned, Mr. Tippin, on the Panaflex display. The Panaflex display, one for one, we can make a lot of comparisons. Two pieces of glass, a couple of silk screenings, glue the thing together, and you fill it with your fluid. But you still require more power, and as a consequence, the reflection back of cost and power are the important considerations. I might mention, for those who aren't familiar with the liquid crystal material itself, it's expensive, maybe a dollar a gram, but one display uses just a mere pittance of that. So the cost of liquid crystal material is insignificant.
Thank you. Yes?
Herman Stern from RCA. I'd like to address myself to the several questions about reflective versus transmissive. And the cost factor, there is none. I don't believe there's a serious cost differential in their manufacture. Now, the secret in preparing a reflective display lies in how you light track. Now, if you take a reflective display and take it in ambient without proper light trapping, it does indeed look terrible. Now, and because of the stray pickup of your tie and your face in the mirror. However, if it is employed properly, just so happens that Bob has an RCA reflective. Now, if you look at that in even this ambient, and I'm not sure, if it were a desk clock, as this is, and sitting on a desk,
those in the back that would like to move up and hear and see a little better.
Now, there are mirrors there, and this is ambient light. There's no backlighting.
I would request, though, that we do take seats on this.
With its viewing, because there is a light track involved. Now, I don't know if it's not a... If you were sitting at that desk...
Not readable from here. Yeah, but they can
stand up. Remember, you see him. I think what you'd have to do is get around it as if you're sitting on your desk, being used as a desk clock. Then this has been designed to, not totally, but somewhat. Yeah, but you can't do that in a high ambient like a desk lamp.
Sure, we build the display for airplane applications where you've got direct sunlight. Oh. Now, using similar construction techniques.
Okay,
what I was answering is a question about
okay, I think if we could get everyone sitting down, I think we better turn off the demonstrations for a little while now that we've stimulated interest, because they will be available for viewing after the session. I think I'd like to move on to the second half of Fred's question pertaining to the response on the cost on the plasmas. John?
Well, we're currently selling to large OEM users at a dollar a digit for the smaller size, 2/10 1/4 inch, and we're selling at $1.10 in the 4/10 series. Those prices are relatively arbitrary in that there's more than a 10% cost differential from the 1/4 inch to the 4/10. It is to some extent a function of the surface area, and we've projected selling prices in the neighborhood of 50 cents a digit, as far out as we think we can get away with it, but certainly we think the technology will support prices at or below a half a dollar a digit. And the question of how soon is a matter of how precipitously the LED people plunge their prices down. The semiconductor guys historically panic and spoil the market, and we'll just see how soon they do that. What?
Is that including electronics?
No, but it turns out, at least at the present time, the electronics are, when you get right down to it, pretty close to a trade-off. In any case, the difference in the cost of the electronics can, at the present time, be offset by differences in the price of the display. We're also doing a considerable amount of work in developing new configurations. There was one point made which is, I think, not well appreciated, but it's very important, and that is the power consumed isn't so important. It's how much it costs to switch and control it. And what we're doing is working to reduce the amount of voltage it requires to switch the display from on to off, because that's really your buffer devices, if any are required, or where you add to your cost. If you can work directly into the MOS chip, and you can use an MOS chip that has one of the high production volume technologies, you're going to make a significant improvement in your overall system's cost. Tom?
I had a clarifying question. People have mentioned, or somebody mentioned, that the fact that it was in these two technologies, the cost was traded more a function of the number of units rather than the number of digits. And I'm assuming you're quoting for a calculator type pricing, which, of course, 8 to 10 digits is larger than typical instruments. What would be the price per digit for a 5-digit cluster?
Well, it's a moot point with us at the moment because most all of what we're making is more than 8 digits. It's just a practical thing at the present time, and my boss gets mad if I say it, but we're sold out for the next several months. And if you've got a certain fixed capacity and you're selling on a cost per digit basis, you might as well run 12 and 16 digit units as 8 or 6 digit units. It's as simple as that. When the supply catches up with the demand, as it inevitably will, there'll be a turnaround and we'll act accordingly. The price is, there are two components to cost in an R-type display, a lot of components, but two major ones. One is there, you've got three pieces, basically, a front, a back, and a spacer. And so you've got a fixed cost per unit, relatively fixed, and a real estate cost, if you will, per unit cost. Then you have a factor which is related to the surface area. If you take a big panel, and we've made some this size, you displace an awful lot of these small panels in your production. So your capital cost and so forth are much higher. With the little one, your labor cost is relatively high on a per digit basis. On the big one, the labor cost is almost the same, except for your shrinkage, because being bigger, just more area for anomalies to occur and spoil the display. So you run into yield problems at the high end. Plus, most of the stuff that we make goes through conveyor furnaces, and the bigger the device is, the more trouble you have getting your temperature profile so that the things don't break. You know, you run it through, if it cracks it and doesn't hold gas, well, you got trouble.
Okay.
I'm not sure who answered my question.
Well, I didn't mean to be evasive. But
no, I know you weren't, John.
What?
I was trying to get a feel for, you were talking about price per digit, but that was for an 8 or 10.
Oh, all right. I've been saying 50 cents a digit, and tacit, I was talking about clocks and small instruments where you're talking 4 digits, $2 a unit for a small display. Okay. Yes?
I was told it wouldn't make one for me.
Well, that's true, but let's put it this way. If you've got enough money, we'll do it, but I don't think there are probably cheaper solutions to your problem in the short term.
$4 a digit.
What?
You saying $4 a digit? $4 display?
No, I'm saying that right now the lowest priced device we make is about $8, and if you want something that's got 4 digits and you're willing to pay $8 for it, we'd probably go ahead and supply it to you once we could get you on the allocation schedule. But you can get, well, be frank, Sperry makes a device that has 2 or 3 digits in it, and for applications where you only need 2 or 3 digits, you can get all of the advantages of gas discharge, and you can get it in a size that suits your application. They also happen, I believe, to be production limited at the moment, but they're building up rapidly also.
I'm looking primarily at 4-digit display devices. Liquid crystals were out due to environmental problems.
The environmental problem? Then?
How big?
Operate over -40 to +140 yes, cyclic.
For how long? 7 or 8 years or 20 years?
Yes.
What size character?
3/10 or larger.
Is it an application where you could stand a heater coating on the glass?
I mean, battery operated.
It has to be battery operated.
Long life, too. Long life.
Long life. The LCD is just a different environment.
No, I don't know of any LCD at the moment that would operate at -40.
Ken,
yes.
I want to ask you. You mentioned the liquid crystal as outdoor advertising, which suggests the point of can you really the characteristics change with temperature? How effective is your advertising sign going to be when it gets down to -10 or -20 versus when it gets up to 100? You're 100 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, you really think you're going to sell outdoor advertising?
I'm not. I you really got me here, because I'm not sure, I don't remember really saying that, but I suppose I might have said that. outdoor type of displays are possible. If you have a situation where you're going to be minus 20, minus 40, I think with current technology, you're going to be in difficulty. But certainly in such things as gasoline pumps, other forms of outdoor display technology, you could provide enough back heating to keep the things in the operating range.
Gentleman in the back.
Bob Radcliffe from Bell Lab. I have not seen anything in advertisements or in the literature about alphanumeric liquid crystal displays. Are there problems there? Or
no, not really. It's very easy to set up the format. We have made them just to see how difficult it is. It's not difficult at all. You use a 16-bar format. At the present time, because there aren't clean-cut, or maybe none, as far as I know, matrix addressing solutions for large XY matrices, you're limited to addressing every segment that you wish to switch on, a driver for each segment. But as far as making the display itself and being able to turn it on and generate any character you wish, there's no limitation on the display. You can see over in the Coliseum an example, again, by our friend here from Rockwell.
The only problem in making them is establishing a market. Not too well for it. There doesn't seem to be very many people interested. We've sold perhaps 2 or 3 dozen alphanumerics. We need to sell you one, but it's not according to an application. Unless you can come forward with an order for 100,000, we wouldn't be able to do well for it.
And I might comment on that. Burroughs, in that first chart I showed, came out with a alphanumeric device about 1963, and it wasn't exactly a dismal failure. We sold a substantial amount to IBM and to Burroughs for use in computer consoles, but it certainly didn't get wide accepted in general applications. And the only significant alphanumeric electronic display that I can even think of that was in a semi-consumer application was the stock market ticker displays that were used in brokers' offices for some years, and that eventually got aced out by a pneumatic display of all things. We are currently in substantial production on self-scan dot matrix 5x7 displays. We have a range of 1x16, one row of 16, one row of 32, an 8x32, and the single register ones are being used fairly widely in certain computer-related applications, and the 8x32 is being used in certain portable mobile type displays. I invite you to see the examples over in our exhibit at the show if you haven't already done that. But basically with alphanumeric displays, you have to have a computer. That's why I touched on the mini computer having had a impact in this market, and I don't know if I really got my point across, but you're not interested in alphanumeric electronic displays unless you have a computer, and you're still not interested unless you have a computer application where you want to interface with a person and talk to them with a computer. And there are beginning to be applications of that sort, but it's certainly not the kind of thing where they're buying them, you know, by the thousands every week. It's a relatively small market compared to the numeric.
Bob, you had a comment to make?
I mentioned something a moment ago, and Bert has just asked that I address myself to it. The question is regarding multiplexing of liquid crystal displays. It is considerably more difficult to do than with an LED display. I've been told by various people, and I'm not sure I should attribute it, so I won't, but I know of one integrated circuit firm who claims to have solved the problem up to 8 digits for a liquid crystal display. I have seen a 10 by 80 matrix done by a Japanese firm. I've seen another one that was 50 by 50 matrix. Now, none of these large matrix liquid crystal displays were not perfect. But what I think I see developing is the emergence of a matrix form for the liquid crystal display. There's a lot of activity going on in many quarters, and there's really quite a few indications that a circuit solution will be found. The moment it appears, the burden is going to be on the circuit more than on the display, unless someone comes up with a radical breakthrough in the performance characteristics of the display.
Bob, did you want to make a comment on the alphanumeric phase of this discussion?
As far as alphas, I don't think that you have to have a computer tied into a terminal to want to use alphanumerics. There's point of sales, there's credit checks, quite a few of the more instrument, but yet more consumer-related instruments, if you will, where they merely need 16 digits or a line of maybe at the most 32. And in some of these applications, some of the present LED alphas are finding acceptability. One of the problems is some of the multiplexing circuitry can be rather complex, depending upon how you work at it. There are some techniques using shift registers, which, particularly with CMOS, which are very, very attractive and are lowering this price requirement.
What sort of cost per character are you talking about in the point of sale?
In point of sale, it's expected within the next year that it can come down below $5 a digit, including electronics. Okay. One way of doing this, and it's going to have to be much less than that, and one way of even getting it below that is to use the technique, as I mentioned, talked about by Larry yesterday, where you're talking about a single monolithic structure per character that has electronics in the back. Now, he was talking about area displays, and he was talking about putting in a lid package, a leadless inverted device, that would be N-stacked, right, and just modularized to make any kind of area you want, and would have a certain amount of electronics in the back to allow easy accessing. It turns out Bert was involved with a Snoopy-type display where you could show Snoopy flying over his doghouse for Fort Monmouth a couple of years ago, and that's the type of technique we're talking about. But the thing that is probably the first thing that will come out and really be competitive is a multi-digit cluster of electronics in the back that will do a lot of your decoding and timing and memory. And all you have to do is feed in some words, and everything else will be taken care of. And that type of system will be much below $5 a digit. It has to be, otherwise it can't be competitive with self-scan.
We have some instrument designers and so forth in the audience. Would any one of them care to comment on what you would like to see in terms of alphanumeric capability for instruments? Yes. Could you speak a little louder, please?
I'd just like to mention an application talking about alphanumerics, in which I'm interested, and which we are planning to introduce in the next couple of years, which is a standard telephone, which has an alphanumeric keyboard with a three-dimensional field, so that you will dial in somebody's name, for example, and the computer will give you a roll-up of names, as in a normal telephone directory. In fact, you replace the directory, and when the correct person comes up, you stop it, and it makes the connection, dials the number, and displays his number on the telephone. And this is the thing that they're working on, which is a large consumer type of application, because we envisage that the phone will cost the same to the user as your normal phone does now, except that they will charge you for using extra data services on the phone, and the facilities are there. What people will tend to do, of course, is go to use them, and they'll be coming up on the
as always.
In the meantime, get rid of their directory service, which is great.
It's a few years off yet, but there is the application that I'm looking for, and why I'm here, and why I'm interested, is a two-dimensional alphanumeric display, which is dirt cheap. The usual things, you know, weighs nothing, costs nothing.
Is a real power.
Because the phone, in order to be able to sell the phone, has got to be reasonably cheap. We've got to develop a new keyboard, smaller than the type of things you're looking at now. But as the comments you were making, the price is coming down. The integrated electrical ICs are coming down, and I think crystals that we've been talking about. I believe RCA has now developed multiplexing of certain merits that are not out in the market yet. But I'm interested, you know, I'm just people were wondering if they couldn't see what possible applications there might be. There is an application in which we're interested.
How much of a premium would you be paying, would you like in power for that application?
Well, there's a certain movement from smaller recharge micas and things back into the telephone for these types of applications that's maintained memory. For example, we want to keep the telephone off book while you dial the number, for example, the number is displayed. And only when you dial the number and are able to send it to you back at the phone and send it, so you occupy less time than 70%. In fact, we're building a prototype right now that is doing this. So we would like to run actually off the line if we could, but essentially as long as the phone works as a phone, in the emergency, it'll work irrespective of the display part of it, then it really doesn't matter. You can use, in other words, line power. There are some cell phones down here in the state that have very light some of them, what have you, and they only work when they're plugged into a wall socket.
Other user applications? Yes, in the back.
Akshak from Wilkes College. I'd like to direct a little question toward a gentleman from Hewlett-Packard. A friend of mine picked up his Model 35 calculator, punched in a problem and saw absolutely nothing. When are you going to do something for the red-green colorblind people?
There is, yeah, that's a good question. Red-green is a bad combination. Well, Monsanto has yellow LEDs. How about that? The turns out that yellow gallium arsenide phosphide is even more expensive to make than the other two alternatives. But that does bring up an interesting point. There is about 1 of 50 in the population. Turns out it's usually the older gentlemen in the crowd that do not see red as well as they do see other colors. And part of it's color blindness. They're just not as sensitive to light. I'm not sure of all the physiological reasons, but it's 1 in 50 in the older age brackets. I'm not sure if that was part of it or if it was just green-red. We can't do the same thing that traffic lights do in Abitibi blue. We'd like to, but gallium nitride is a little bit esoteric for today's high volume production. So I guess the answer to your question is I'm afraid we're not doing too much right now aside from some yellow and maybe some lab work in blue.
There are several questions Larry Tennis was talking about on the multiplexing of liquid crystals. And everyone says that liquid crystals are fine display. All right, now I want to multiplex it. One answer is that liquid crystals are not very multiplexable, first, and second is it's not all that important because you don't have the cost in electronics. You don't have the savings advantage because you're not saving much in electronics. The other answer is we've developed the multiplexing chip that multiplexes both the numeric and the alphanumeric, 2-on-1 and 3-on-1. So with one MOS LSI chip, you can drive a 12 character numeric display. The device has been completely developed, the MOS technology has been developed. I'm not sure we're going into production on it, but if anyone was interested in procuring it, I'm sure that they could go into production. But a liquid crystal itself is not inherently a multiplexable thing. It likes to have a full duty cycle. And if you do multiplex it, you make a compromise in the temperature operating range.
How is the 12-digit divided in order to drive it? I didn't understand exactly what you said.
Well, we take the 12 numeric, bring out the 7 connector points for each of the numeric 7 bar
right.
Characters plus the decimal, and multiplex that within the MOS chip itself.
But are you really got a an 8x12 matrix going there? Or have you somehow split it? You're doing four digits at a time or something of the sort of...
No, it's truly, it's not multiplexed in an XY scan sense. Uh-huh. It's multiplexed in a frequency divide sense. The display is driven at 20 cycles, and those devices that are on are in phase with 20 cycles, and those that are off are out of phase for the 20 cycles, and then there's a kilocycle signal superimposed on top of that. A lot of fuss, but it doesn't matter. It's all in one little chip that in large volumes cost less than $3. But it is a lot of fuss with devices, you know, it's not inherently multiplexable with existing materials that are in production right now. There's always hope.
I'd like to hear it. I thought I saw Fred about to say something. I'm always interested in what he's about to say about it.
What I was trying to say was that a number of years ago, when the first liquid crystal device came out, everyone started working on dynamic scattering. So now you're seeing coming from the market dynamic scattering devices. And in some cases, like in the case of Elixco, you're starting to see field effect devices, which is dynamic scattering is the first generation device and field effect is the second generation device. And so that when someone says that the liquid crystals are not multiplexable, that's an absolute statement. You should ask yourself what they mean. What they're saying is it's very difficult to multiplex dynamic scattering devices without providing high power and without doing some critical engineering on the device. But at the same time, there are other effects, and many of them are inherently highly multiplexable. And I think you will see very interesting developments in alphanumeric devices, even if they're crystal at low power, compatible with integrated circuit technology.
Do you care to make some predictions as to where they'll be used?
Here's the market, and I'll let you find what you do.
What's the third generation coming after field effect? What's being developed now?
Close to Yeah, in fact, the dynamic.
Sure.
First of all, I think field effect, when people say field effect right now, almost all of them mean twisted math.
Yes.
And now there are many field effects. I think there's almost a lot of slang and loose statements we made with Dr. Christian. So the trying to say, yes, ma'am, there are about a half a dozen major phenomena associated with this. Each of them has a peculiarity and that there is advantage. And as Ray pointed out, the dynamic scattering was the first bandwagon. And some people think this is successful, others don't. The twisted pneumatics should be multiplexable. It's got a reasonably sharp threshold. And we should be able to make long duty cycles out, which is the thing that has been bothering the dynamic scattering. The cholesteric pneumatic phase transition seems a little bit of attention. I think that's the Matsushita device. It has an even sharper threshold and requires generally a little higher voltage, but if we hear from the plasma people, high voltage is in nuclear integration is not going to be a problem. If that's the case, then I think that some of these other phenomena, which are readily multiplexable, will show up in the alphanumerics, and I think even you'll find it in a large number of alphanumerics, 1,000 to 2,000 characters. Take advantage of the low power. Now, in addition to that, there are other liquid crystal phenomena that are viewable in reflective mode. Some of the things that Fred has worked on, that we've worked on. We're talking about cultures with that has inherent high reflectivity in color. You can make them go to a very low reflectivity. So I think you have to be very careful you don't look. Not look at crystals into one phenomenon, and secondly, that you'll find each one of the different phenomena finding their niche on different applications. Mm.
Thank you.
I would agree with that.
We have some other questions from the audience. Fred, again.
I'd like to go back to the power question. It's been said that there isn't a need for low power. On the other hand, when you use your Hewlett-Packard calculator or North American calculator on batteries, and you forget to turn it off, and you go back 8 hours later, you're in trouble.
And this one will last 20.
Okay.
That's not too much of a problem if you got a light socket right by.
But it would seem that as the ship becomes lower power, then there's going to be a requirement for the display to become lower power. And the telephone company, we have a similar thing that we one would like a display that would operate off the power available from the telephone line that you would like, and you have to plug your display into the wall. So there are just two examples where it would seem that low power adjustable displays would be quite useful.
I tend to agree. I think there definitely is going to be a segment of applications where low power is going to have a premium place. But to answer your question on the calculator, after using mine for about 9 months, the rechargeable feature really hasn't created a problem at all, simply because for most places where you're normally using it, if it does run low, you can plug in your charger and operate from it. But there are applications where you but not like that inconvenience. And obviously, particularly watches as one in addition to the other. Since Fred brought up the question of power, I would like to kind of get each of the panel members to kind of give the audience some sort of an estimate of how much total power is required, say, per digit for their particular display technologies. Start with John.
I was afraid you'd ask that. I don't know the answer. It's not that I'm being evasive. I just have a lousy memory for numbers. It turns out that in the first generation of handheld calculators in an efficiently designed circuit, the Panaplex is lower power consumption than the LEDs. I don't know what the comparison is in the most up-to-date designs.
0.7 watts per digit.
What?
0.7 watts per digit directly. Multiplex
that
by a factor of 8 and almost divided by 8.
Well,
in the display itself.
What I mean, I don't know what Panaplex is, and that I should know, but I don't.
That's what he's talking about.
Oh, well, good. How does that compare with LEDs?
I would say with liquid crystals are less than 50 microwatts per digit.
Well,
down to zero.
You're talking about two broadly different classes. If you have an application where you can live with reflected light, you're talking about a device that doesn't emit light and where luminous efficiency is not important. If you have an application where you want emitted light, then luminous efficiency becomes important, and you're talking about things like LEDs, vacuum fluorescent, or gas discharge. And I've talked to some people who've done studies on this, and there are indications that there's substantial room for improvement in the LEDs. I don't know how much there is in the gas discharge. But in the final analysis, in most of the commercial applications to which I've been exposed, power is not an insignificant consideration, but it often is not the dominant one. And you're always trading off and weighing and balancing. And it's been said several times from various speakers that each device has certain combinations of parameters which make it more suitable for some applications than another. To cite a case in point, we're doing very little work with wristwatches because we just don't see how a light-emitting device can get the luminous efficiency that you need to compete in a digital wristwatch with something like a liquid crystal that doesn't emit light. Now, somebody said, well, how do you see your liquid crystal display in the dark? And the answer is, well, you don't. But there are a lot of wristwatches sold that don't have luminous hands, too.
Yeah. In the wristwatch, the power and dynamic scattering is held below 10 microwatts for the entire display. That's an average of 14 segments on in a 24-hour day. It's under 10 microwatts. It's the power.
What's the power?
With a field effect the display, of course, it's much less than that because in principle, in field effect, you don't need to draw any current at all. And your only power loss, you can look forward to reducing the power loss to that which is consumed in the circuitry.
What's the
power for the backlight liquid crystal display per digit?
Well, that's very arbitrary. It depends on how much power you want for aesthetic reasons only. If you've got the power available and you want a display to look a brilliant white, then you can pump more power in it. But it's entirely arbitrary. And I think Bob did touch at one point, the power consumed in the display is less than the power consumed in the electronics that drive the display. And that goes for all of the technologies. Mm-hmm.
The, you know, in that box up there, I've got an 8-watt fluorescent bulb, and it's got tremendous lighting power, and you could go way below that with the little edge light that I have on there that would be usable for cockpit or testing, automobile or nighttime clock application, is about 3/4 of a watt. That's for dynamic scattering. Field effects seem to be able to utilize lower power, lighting. The Tekelec instrument I have has a 0.5-watt bulb behind that, and that was viewable, I think, by everybody in the room with the lights on. So the that therefore, if you say it's a 4-digit display, we had 1/8 of a watt per digit in backlighting, non-switch.
Bob, would you like to comment on power?
Yeah, again, I'd like to break it down into a couple of market segments. We're talking about the small portable instruments, typically using the calculator type of displays. We're just talking about the standard products available today. We can say that it's operatable at less than 5 milliwatts per digit. If we're going into some gallium phosphide displays, we can drop that by at least a couple of times. Also, if we're going into packages where there a higher amount of magnification is being used, just going from the 1.4 magnification to 2 drops that from 5 to about 2.5 milliwatts per digit. So there's a lot of room for that to flatten and get much lower. For the present generation of displays being introduced that we talked about in general, where we're using optical stretching, the right today we can expect to need about 100 milliwatts per digit. And in the next, if we're talking 18 months or so, that'll come down, depending upon the materials that are used, and still a reasonable price, to around 20 to 10 milliwatts per digit.
Multiplexed, or you mean times the number of digits?
This is time average per digit.
Well, if you have a 10-digit display, how many milliwatts?
Multiply that by 10. I'm talking about average power. That's what power is supposed to be. Average power per digit.
That includes electronics, power supply.
No, you asked. No, this is for the display.
Yeah. I might comment on one thing, too. When you talk about the power that's consumed in the display, it's significant as to what you're trying to overcome the part of the viewer. A liquid crystal might be 10 microwatts per character in the most brilliant of ambient lighting that you could imagine, where numbers that are quoted for other displays are usually for ambient desk-type lighting, not outdoor high ambient lighting. So their power consumption goes up by a factor of 10. They have to counteract such as the outdoor 10,000-foot metric sky. And the power that's consumed in the display surface, you have to add about a factor of 2 for the power.
Again, that depends upon the application. If you're direct driving off of MOS and only need a couple of digit drivers, GP transistors, and you're working from a 3.6-volt supply into CMOS, that may not be true. Depends upon the application.
Right.
And there are large volumes.
Be more power consumed than electronics. Right?
Yeah.
And that they are kind of related.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, you can't forget the electronics, that's for sure.
Let me make one comment on the electronics, since the general trend of the thought is that the electronics require more power than the display. I think while that may be the case now, it's not a necessity. About 4 years ago, within HP Labs, we did some exploratory work on LED area-type displays. And we made a display for Fort Monmouth, which was an array of 32 by 50 light-emitting diodes. This display had built-in memory and used 50 integrated circuits to provide memory and to reduce the number of leads coming out of the display. So we could operate this 1600-dot display with 16 leads coming in. We also had the logic supply gated, and the circuits were fast enough that the logic power required for the display was less than the power required for one LED. So I point that out in the special case where you're working with memory in the display that you do have capabilities to operate these displays with very low electronics power. And I think that as the technology evolves, so we're going to see the day when the electronics is going to consume a small amount of power compared to the display. And the only place that I see that power is going to be maybe not used quite as efficiently is in, for the LED case, in regulating the current. But that may even come down itself as the techniques evolve for driving the displays. Yes?
More on the subject of electronics, could the Burroughs people comment on what their experience has been with the high voltage LSI, MSI semiconductor? How's your experience of the availability of these and cost trends and so forth?
Well, it's an evolving thing. Is most of the stuff and something that's moving as fast as this, to give you a sort of a case history. When we announced Panaplex One, I think it was 1969, the MOS people were pretty much oblivious to Burroughs and gas discharges. They'd been pointed towards the vacuum fluorescent devices, because the Japanese were dominant in the calculator business at the time, and they tended to set the direction of development. And as it happens, from a voltage viewpoint, the vacuum fluorescent devices tend to be reasonably adaptable to some of the more common MOS technologies. We tried to sell our Panaplex One, which was a formed metal cathodes inside a glass envelope. In that market, we found out that being a Johnny-come-lately was a major handicap. And the upshot of it was that we had to put buffers on both the anodes and cathodes, and worse than that, the timing in the chips had been optimized for vacuum fluorescent and perhaps LED displays or something else. They were certainly not for gas discharge, and it was a significant handicap, which we had to offset by a reduction in prices of the device so that the overall cost would be competitive. And when the second generation, we then began what amounted to a technical sales effort, where we sent representatives around to develop a liaison with the MOS chip people, because that was the key to the puzzle. We had some modest success with that. When Panaplex 2 came out and caught hold, the MOS people changed, not, I suspect, so much because of our efforts, as the fact that our customers were going to them and demanding chips which were directly compatible with Panaplex 2. We're at an intermediate stage now where there are a number of chips on the market which, if you don't care about design margins, can be said to interface directly with Panaplex 2. And if you want to be a little more conservative, you can probably interface either the anode or cathodes directly with the chip and then put switches on the other side. And in some of our product development, we are pointing in the direction of a device that will be directly compatible with the suitably designed MOS chip, where you may have some passive elements for referencing or capacitors or something on one side or the other, but basically you're directly connected from the Panaplex directly into the MOS chip. And then there's sort of an intermediate stage where we can make some changes in our devices so that you can interface on one side or the other conveniently. And we expect within the next year we'll be making some major announcements in that direction. And we think that the overall cost to drive, at least in the next several years, will be closely enough comparable that selection will be probably more on the basis of overall cost and aesthetics than it will be on power consumption or drive cost, because we think those things are going to be close trade-offs.
I think right now it's getting to be about 4:30, so I'll ask the speakers to maybe make just a 1 or 2 minute summary. Then we'll close the session, and then you can come up and take a look at the various displays and carry on with more individual discussion. And, would you like to start, Bob?
Well, I think the first point I'd like to reiterate is that the liquid crystal technology and dynamic scattering form and field effect and the twisted pneumatic, to be specific, has begun to be used. There are more than one, more than just the Rockwell application that is moving. I think the reasons for this is that it is a low-cost display. They do require very low power to operate. I didn't get an opportunity to show everything here, but there is a very high degree of flexibility in format, some color possibilities that are very pleasing. They're visible in any lighting condition, I mean, up to the brightest. There's just no way you can wash them out. I think they reach the level of reliability that is necessary. And I think in some instances they offer such unique solutions to display problems that they're going to open up an entirely new area of digital and alphanumeric applications.
Well,
I want to say one more thing. I'm not trying to claim they're going to sweep all these gentlemen away. I think there is a very clear area of displays that they will occupy.
I think the thing to remember in considering light-emitting diodes is because things move so rapidly, we tend to forget that LEDs themselves are rather new and that we're just beginning to scratch the surface as far as the possibilities of lowering the materials cost. It's still, while it's dropped 5 times from just what it was a couple of years ago, it still has a long ways to go. There's a long ways to go in improving the efficiency of the material. So power consumption is, while it's already down quite a bit as we saw, it's going to come down even lower. And certainly price, from the same reason, not only materials, but the way that we handle things to get that light out and to get the most for our money. And it makes it also very clear that from the interface, we talked about MOS. And again, the instruments are going to be going toward not the high threshold MOS, I feel, but the low threshold and the also the N channel, where we have the advantage of being able to work our total system off a single low power, low voltage supply, and not have to worry about withstanding or trying to provide a output that has to withstand substantial switching voltages. So the low voltage, the low power, and the low cost, I think, will combine to make LEDs very attractive and very competitive. And also optimal for a vast majority of the applications. Again, not a sweeping type of application or use, because that's a mistake in any field to make a total statement. I think that for a vast majority, they will be there.
Thank you. I hardly know what to say, and I have a feeling I've probably already said too much. I think that I'd like to reiterate a point I made earlier, and that is that we're very optimistic about the prospects for gas discharge, and like our other speakers here, I don't anticipate gas discharge driving everybody else out of business anytime soon. And yet, we've literally invested millions of dollars worth of money in the technology in the last couple of years, and contrast to people in the receiving tube business who are frantically looking for something to do. And I think that we're willing to put our money where our mouth is.
Thank you. I would like to thank the audience for its participation, and I'd also like to thank the speakers and close the session with a hand for them.